Hi, welcome to Eat, Sleep, and Don't Die, your weekly dose of nightmares and monsters, otherwise known as paranormal activity and true crime stories. Join me today as we talk about the exorcism of Emma Schmidt and the disappearance of Tara Calico. Welcome to episode 19 of Eat, Sleep, and Don't Die. Thank you for joining me today. I've got two really awesome stories. I guess they're not awesome, but they're pretty interesting stories that I've actually kind of wanted to cover for a while now, but I didn't want to like throw them out right in the beginning of the podcast. I like to kind of spread out what I'm covering. So anyway, we're 1 week away from episode 20, which means I will have done 20 episodes of this podcast, which I wouldn't have gotten this far if it wasn't for all of you guys listening. So thank you so much for your support, for listening every week, even if sometimes I might be a day late or a few hours late. I really appreciate your patience with me, guys. Speaking of episodes being late, this one is late because I was having issues with the Anchor app yesterday. I was able to record, but then it wasn't letting me. I normally like record and then I set it to schedule release at midnight, and it wasn't letting me schedule release it, and it wasn't letting me release it like on the spot, so I couldn't even release it right after I recorded it. And then I was able to schedule it to release at 8 a.m. today. And then when I woke up, I went to check to make sure that it posted, and the whole app just crashed on me. And when I opened it back up, the whole episode was gone. And I was so pissed. Like, for a lack of a better word, I was just furious. Because I was like, I just recorded like an hour-long episode, you know, and I was so passionate about it, and it's gone. The whole thing was gone. And so, whatever. I'm over it now, and I super apologize, but now I'm recording this at, it's about 9:45 p.m. on Tuesday night, because I have to now re-record the whole episode. So I super apologize that you'll be getting this Wednesday at like that midnight hour between Tuesday and Wednesday. So hopefully you guys aren't too mad at me. If you are part of the Facebook group, I did update you guys on the Facebook group that this episode would be late. So at least you guys had a heads up. So thanks for being part of that Facebook group. I also wanted to say that this week is Christmas week, if you celebrate Christmas. Yesterday was the winter solstice, so happy winter solstice to whoever celebrates that, which I believe is called Yule. So Merry Yule, Happy Yule. I also wanted to say Merry Christmas to any Christians that listen or anybody who celebrates Christmas. It is one of my favorite holidays, but mostly from the religious side of things, not so much the gift giving and stuff. I won't really get into that because this is not a religious podcast. But I do really enjoy Christmas and stuff like that. New Year's will be next week because, of course, Christmas and New Year's are a week apart. I want to share my New Year's resolution with you guys next episode, so definitely listen to that one. I've got some pretty exciting New Year's resolutions for you guys, or to tell you guys about. And one thing I saw on Facebook today, actually, I was scrolling, and I have a friend on Facebook who said a few years ago she decided to start making fun resolutions, and she said that she was tired of making resolutions that made her feel like she had to change something about herself, so she started making resolutions that she felt were fun and things that she could actually accomplish. So she said she had done, like, one of them was to watch one movie for 52, like, one movie every week for 52 weeks. So, essentially, at the end of the year, she would have watched 52 movies in theaters, which, of course, she didn't get to do all of that. She got, I think, to, like, 47 or something like that. And then she said this year's New Year's resolution that she had when she started 2020 was to watch 52 different TV series or docuseries or stuff like that, and like just binge watch them once, one series every week. And she said she actually accomplished that. And so I kind of thought about it, and I was like, you know, that's actually a really good idea to make a fun resolution instead of your typical, I'm going to stop drinking, I'm going to stop eating junk food, I'm going to lose 100 pounds, when it makes you feel bad about yourself when you get to the end of the year and you didn't complete it, or you couldn't complete it, or whatever the case may be. So I am challenging you all to make a fun resolution for next year. So you can still do, if you want to lose weight, if you want to stop drinking, you want to stop smoking, you want to go on whatever your normal resolutions are, you can still do those, but I challenge you to make a fun resolution. So hopefully you're in the Facebook group, because I will ask you guys about it later this week, and hopefully I can share your guys's New Year's resolutions. So watch out for that if you're in the Facebook group. And if you're not, join the Facebook group. It's a fun, well, it's mostly me talking right now on the group. Hopefully you guys become more comfortable and start making your own posts, talking about things, and talking with each other, because that's what it's about. But it is a fun group. I post pictures, I post videos in there. Soon I'll have like live Q&As and things like that. So join that group. It's fun. It's ESDD Podcast Fan Group. So you can join that. The next thing I wanted to talk about was the contest that I have going on with the group right now. And it's pretty much a raffle, so the more you do, the more tickets you get. The first place winner gets a guest spot on the podcast, like you'll be on one of my episodes. And you don't need any special equipment, just headphones and a phone, a smartphone essentially. Or a laptop that you can plug your headphones into, anywhere that you can get a link to click open, pretty much. And then second place will get a free merch of their choice. So, I'll be adding more stuff this week to the merch site, so you guys can take a look at that. So, ways to enter the raffle is to become a Patreon donor at the eat or sleep level, which will get you two tickets. Become a Patreon donor at the don't die or sponsorship level, and that gets you four tickets. Another one is to have a friend listen to the podcast and join the Facebook group. And that's pretty much based on the honor system, and it only counts if the person who joins the Facebook group says that you referred them to the group, and that'll get you a ticket. Or if you make group posts that pertain to the podcast or specific episodes. So if you post to the group and you say, hey, what did you guys think about last week's episode and when Kiana talked about blah, blah, blah. So if you do that, you'll get another post. You'll get another ticket per post. So if you post three posts in a week, you get three tickets. And that will end on December 31st. So I'll announce the winner the first episode of the new year. So I'm excited about that. And that's about all that I wanted to kind of cap up for you guys before this episode starts. So let's just jump right into the stories. Our first story is about the exorcism of Emma Schmidt, who was known by Anna Eklund. Like, that was her pseudonym name. So, Emma was born on March 23rd, 1882, in Marathon, Wisconsin, where her family lived. And she was a devout Catholic. Emma's parents were German immigrants, according to Wisconsin records of the time. Emma began experiencing symptoms of possession in her preteen years, and she would, so the symptoms that she would have would be that she'd be disgusted by religious or holy objects, have disturbed thoughts, and an inability to enter churches. It also was reported that she would partake in unspeakable sexual acts, which I kind of assume that being that she was a devout Catholic, that these unspeakable sexual acts were meaning sex or perhaps even oral sex being unspeakable things because she was an unmarried woman, but I don't know for sure. And it was believed by some that she was possessed because of a curse that was thrown on her by her aunt Mina, who was a local witch that placed spells on her food as she prepared them. So Mina was also supposedly having an affair with Emma's father. Not much is known about Emma's parents, but her mom died when she was young, leaving her with her abusive father, who was also an alcoholic. And at 14, she became consumed with thoughts of smashing holy water fountains and hurting the priests. On June 18th, 1912, Emma underwent an exorcism by Father Theophilus Riesinger, a Capuchin priest from Bavaria who was entrusted by Bishop Thomas Dunn of Des Moines, Iowa. So Riesinger was a monk. He was a monk at the community of St. Anthony's in Marathon, Wisconsin. There wasn't much documentation of the first exorcism of Emma, but Emma was not bothered again for nearly 20 years. Or that was the first account that I read. The second one said that she claimed to not have had a peaceful night in the almost 20 years since that first exorcism, when she met up with Riesinger again in the summer of 1928. So in the summer of 1928, Emma's father and her aunt were already dead at the time, but Riesinger was again contacted to perform a second exorcism on Emma. So Father Joseph Steiger of Erling, Iowa, suggested that the exorcism be done in the convent owned by Franciscan sisters in Erling, which he was, I guess, like the head priest there or something. So Emma was taken to the convent in August 17th, 1928. And she supposedly experienced many symptoms of possession, including fits of rage over food that was sprinkled with holy water and hissing like a cat. And on August 18th, they began the exorcism, and it was said to be very violent. And apparently Emma had levitated, howled, and hung from the frame in the doorway. The first session lasted until August 26th, which was 8 days long. The second lasted 7 days from September 13th to the 20th, and the third was a final 8 day long session from December 15th to the 23rd. So they did this second exorcism in three sessions altogether. The exhaustive exorcisms led to a deteriorating body for Emma, and she refused to eat any food, but she still vomited gross debris and what seemed like tobacco leaves, even though they said all she had was like maybe a little water and like little nibbles of bread. Her face reportedly swelled and then like it contracted, which I don't really know what that means. I think it just means that it swelled and then went back to normal. And she would speak in different tongues that she didn't know, but she spoke proficiently. So like, your typical possession, they start speaking like Latin, but they've never spoke Latin in their life. The exorcism was said to be so horrifying that several nuns asked to be relocated. During the second exorcism sessions, Father Steiger was doubtful and second-guessing allowing the exorcism to take place at his parish, but Father Riesinger convinced him that those were the devil's thoughts. So Riesinger tried to convince him, just let us finish out till Friday, till the end of the week, and then we'll go from there. Well, Riesinger was actually in a car accident that week, and he survived with minor injuries, but the following nights he could not sleep due to unearthly thoughts that only stopped when he would pray. So Emma was believed to be possessed by Judas Iscariot, as well as Jacob, and her own father. And also her Aunt Mina. So her father was said to have cursed her with the help of her Aunt Mina, who was supposedly his lover also, for refusing his sexual advances when she was younger. So, what's that called? For refusing to commit, like, incestuous relationships. On December 23rd, the final day of the three-part exorcism, Father Riesinger commanded the demons out of Emma's body in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, which is also known as the Holy Trinity, and through intercession of the Virgin Mary to depart to hell where they came from. Emma collapsed on the bed and began to shriek, Beelzebub, Judas, Jacob, Mina, followed by hell, hell, hell. She opened her eyes and spoke in her own voice, to which she said, from what a terrible burden have I been freed at last. My Jesus, mercy, praise be to Jesus Christ. The exorcism was reportedly successful, and Emma only exhibited mild symptoms that were manageable afterwards. Father Riesinger continued to preach and perform exorcisms until he died in 1941. Sorry, I keep flipping this page because I wrote stuff on the front, on the back, but I typed it up as well, so it's kind of just a big mess. So Emma Schmidt's real name was kept a secret in written accounts, but so they used the pseudonym Anna Eklund. She died on July 23rd, 1941, at the age of 59. There's a movie that's loosely based on her possession called The Exorcism of Anna Eklund, which is based on an account that a theologian named Carl Vogel wrote about the exorcism. So he wrote this, they call it a pamphlet. Sorry, that was a weird noise. They called it a pamphlet, so he wrote this originally in German, and it was titled Begone Satan in 1935, and he used the pseudonym Anna Eklund for Emma Schmidt because he didn't know her actual name. Vogel gathered eyewitness accounts for his pamphlet, and he wrote it to give those of strong faith reason to continue giving battle to evil. So, due to the story being secondhand, like from Vogel's eyewitness accounts that he gathered, there's a large debate over the validity of this story and whether it actually happened or not. And although eyewitnesses swear by their accounts that this did actually happen, some say Emma was not possessed at all, but she suffered from mental illness, which back in the early 1900s, mental illness was a lot of times misdiagnosed as a possession because they didn't understand how different mental illnesses affected people or that they even existed to begin with. So some don't even believe that Emma existed at all because there are no official records that have her name on it. But there are official Catholic documents of a sanctioned exorcism of a woman in the convent that, in that convent in Erling, Iowa, where there was a 3-session exorcism that lasted for those amount of times that are in that pamphlet that Vogel wrote. So it was whether they kind of went off of that information that they had there and he just kind of wrote those dates in because it matched up, or whether that was the eyewitness account and somebody found the records later on and said, hey, these match up, they're probably right. But the name was redacted in those records from the Catholic Church, so we don't know for sure if the girl's name was Emma Schmidt, but there are records of an Emma Schmidt in Wisconsin and then traveling to Iowa. So, I mean, there are things that make this story seem like it is legit. I believe it's legit. I do believe that Emma was a real person. I don't know if her name was actually Emma Schmidt, but that's what the story says, so that's what we're going to go with. But yeah, so that's the exorcism and possession of Emma Schmidt, a.k.a. Anna Eklund. You can watch that movie, Exorcism of Anna Eklund. I have not seen it. I have heard of it, but I'm a big, big scaredy cat of scary movies. So, I don't know if I'll ever watch it, but maybe one day. Maybe you guys can convince me to watch it someday. So yeah, that's the end of the story of Emma Schmidt, aka Anna Eklund. So our second story today is about the disappearance of Tara Lee Calico. So Tara was born on February 28, 1969. She's from Belen, New Mexico. On September 20th, 1988, Tara disappeared near her home. She left her home around 9:30 a.m. for her daily bike ride on New Mexico State Road 47. I just want to say, they said that this was like a 30-something mile bike ride that she did every morning. That's crazy. I would not ride 30-something miles every day. But anyway, on with the story. This was the same route that she rode every morning. So her mother would sometimes accompany her on these rides, but she stopped when she felt that a motorist was following them. So she just stopped going with Tara, because you should just let your daughter ride by herself when you don't even feel safe riding. But anyway, she told her daughter, or she told Tara, to carry mace around for protection, but Tara refused to do that. The morning that Tara disappeared, she told her mom to come find her if she wasn't home by noon, because she had plans to go play tennis with her boyfriend at 12:30. So when Tara didn't come home, her mom went out searching for her along her usual biking route, but she did not see her anywhere, so she contacted police. Later on, pieces of her Walkman and cassette tape were found along her usual route. It's believed that she may have intentionally dropped it to mark her trail, or so that somebody could find it and know that she went missing. Many witnesses reported that they saw her biking on her usual path, but none of them saw her abduction. Her bike has never been found, which I read that the bike was actually her mom's bike because Tara's bike was being fixed. So it was like a pink mountain bike that had like yellow, tire walls and yellow like brake lines. So this bike has never been found. So some witnesses claim to have seen a light-colored pickup truck with an attached camper following close behind her, and they believe that it was possibly a 1953 Ford. On June 15th, 1989, 1989, and she disappeared in 88. So I think that's about 9 months later. A Polaroid picture of an unidentified woman and a boy was found in a parking lot. And in the picture, both the young woman and the boy were gagged with black duct tape around their mouth and presumably bound at the hands and feet. So the photo was found in a convenience store parking lot in Port St. Joe, Florida. And the woman who found it said that there was a white windowless Toyota cargo van in the parking spot, driven by a man in his 30s with a mustache. So police set up roadblocks, but they were unable to find this man or the van. And according to Polaroid, the company, the picture had to be taken after May of 1989 because the film used was not available until after May of 1989. So the picture was fairly recent. This photo was broadcasted on TV, and friends of Tara's mom contacted her because they thought that the young woman in the picture looked like Tara. And relatives of Michael Henley, which was presumably the boy at the time. Like, they saw the picture and they said that looked like him. They also were called in for that picture to see it. So Tara's mom was convinced that that was her in the picture, noting a scar that was in the same place on her daughter as was the girl in the picture, which was on one of her legs, I think the left leg. And there was also a book lying next to the woman in the photo that also happened to be one of Tara's favorite books. So Scotland Yard said that it was Tara in the picture after an analysis, while Los Alamos National Laboratory disagreed, and an FBI analysis of the picture was inconclusive as to whether it was Tara or not. So Michael Henley's mom believed that it was her son in the picture, though it was highly unlikely because Michael Henley's body was found 7 miles from the campsite that he went missing from, which was, and then where he went missing was 75 miles from where Tara went missing. And he was believed to have wandered away from the campsite and died from exposure to the elements. So they don't believe that the two cases are related at all, or that the boy in the picture was Michael Henley. Two more Polaroids possibly depicting Tara had been found. The first was of a blurry photo of a girl who had black tape covering her mouth and a light blue striped fabric behind her, which was similar to a pillow that was in the pic from the van from June of 1989. And Polaroid said that this picture was taken on film that was available after June of 1989. So that was fairly recent after the other Polaroid picture. And then the second one of these next two shows a loosely bound woman with gauze. Like, she was loosely bound with gauze. And then her eyes were covered with more gauze, with a male passenger next to her on an Amtrak train. So the film used here was not available until February of 1990. So 2 years after her disappearance. And Tara's mom believed that the first photo could possibly be Tara, but she wasn't too sure about the second one. She thought that that one might just be like somebody trying to play a really cruel joke. And then the case kind of went cold after that. So in 2008, Rene Rivera, the sheriff of Valencia County, reported that he received information that two teens had hit Tara with their truck, panicked, and then killed her. So supposedly they drove up behind her, an accident occurred at some point, and Tara died, and they covered it up. So Rivera claims that he knows the teens' names, but without a body or evidence, he cannot make a case, so he won't release any of that. So Tara's stepfather said that the sheriff should have never made this claim or made this statement if he wasn't willing to give up evidence, arrest anyone, or attempt to make a case against anyone, which I kind of agree. Why say anything if you don't know anything? That would have kind of riled me up, especially, like, what, 30 years later, you're going to bring it all back up? And I'm sure her family looked for her the whole time, is still looking for her. But to bring that up when you don't have conclusive evidence or a case to make against anybody is kind of shitty. So after that, in October of 2013, a 6-person task force was made to reinvestigate the disappearance, but no new leads were made, and as of 2017, no arrests were made. On October 1st, 2019, the FBI announced a $20,000 reward for precise details leading to the identification or location of Tara Lee Calico, and information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible for her disappearance. So if you go on the FBI's, like, missing persons page, you can find Tara's missing person page there. And it gives you the information of what she was last wearing, her height, what, like, her hair color, her eye, like, all the description of what she looked like when she went and disappeared. And then they do have, like, an aged picture of what she might look like now. But who knows if she gained weight, if she lost weight. She may look completely different. She may have cut her hair. She may have dyed it. Who knows? But she was 19 when she went missing. 19. So I guess I don't really know if any of you guys have any information, but if you do, you can contact the FBI on her disappearance. So that story I think is pretty interesting because they literally have no leads on where she could be, what happened to her. The bike has never been recovered. The only thing they found was her Walkman and a cassette. So, I mean, I wonder if they found, like, tire prints by it, or if they ever looked up, like, who owned light-colored 1953 Fords in that area. I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of people in the 80s that did. It was only a vehicle that was 30 years old, but, I mean, there's so much that's unknown about this case, but I wanted to share it with you guys because I thought it was interesting, and it had a lot of information for not having a lot of information, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's the disappearance of Tara Lee Calico. That brings us to the end of episode 19. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed the story or stories. Just wanted to shout out all the different social medias and websites and stuff like that. Join the Facebook group at ESDD Podcast Fan Group. Follow the Instagram, which is at ESDD Podcast. If you feel generous enough to donate, you can go on Patreon, and it's patreon.com/ESDDpod. If you're in the Facebook group, there is a link to it. You just have to scroll a little bit to find it. I may repost it tomorrow or something. And then there's the merch site, which is ESDDpodcast.bigcartel.com. So check that out. Every purchase helps me make this podcast better. I'm slowly getting the money up so that I can get a second mic, which is my first goal. And my second goal is to get new, like a laptop that I can actually edit my stuff on and get the software to do that so that this podcast can sound better. So hopefully I can get that going in 2021. There's also a contact for us, or for me, so you can email the podcast, and that's eat.sleep.anddontdie@gmail.com, and everything is spelled out. And I want you guys to send me your personal true crime or paranormal stories to that email so that I can share it on every first Tuesday's listeners episode. Every first Tuesday of the month listener episode. I have a couple stories for next listeners episode, so I'm excited to share those. Hopefully I get some more. I want to have quite a few stories to share. Also, if you do donate on Patreon, you get your name read at the end of the episode as a supporter. So that's a little extra incentive. So I am super excited. Next week is our 20th episode. So maybe I'll have someone special on the podcast next week for the special 20th episode. I think I will. I just decided now. I'm going to do it. Somebody's going to be on the podcast. I just have to figure out who. I hope you guys have a great week. If you celebrate any of the holidays this week, happy holidays. I hope you guys have great time, however you celebrate it, whether you're able to get together with a few friends and family, or if you do it virtually, however you do it, I hope you have a great time. I hope you guys have a great weekend, and I will talk to you guys again on Tuesday. So, bye.